Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, where we invite all sides to face the music and dance together through conversations for co-creation, where we turn down the heat and we turn up the light. Well, I just got back from a weekend in New Orleans at the Unrig the System Summit, a transpartisan event designed to help us overgrow the partisan trance so that we people on all sides can effectively work together to solve problems instead of defending our positions. And having done that, having been there all weekend and having met 1,500 people all ready for transformation, I'm more heartened than I've ever been that we're on the cusp of true American evolution. Okay? Now, that's when we, the people, can finally establish government of the people, by the people, for the people, where the government does our bidding, not the bidding of the highest bidder. Now, 2 weeks ago, we had a guest, Richard Lang, who spoke to us about his new book, Virtual Country, and the idea that is laid out in that book called National Town Square. Today, we're going to go a little further in exploring this new and independent political institution that can transform our political condition, and without any official approval from Congress, without support of corporations, without even the mainstream media. So this week, Richard is going to be joined by the Reverend Lupton Abshire, who is Director Strategic Outreach for the National Town Square, and you, because during the second half hour, you're invited to join the conversation by phone, and the phone number, write this down, 202-570-7057, and I will be announcing that number throughout the show. And so now, Richard Lang, welcome to the show once again.
Oh, thank you very much, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, well, why don't you, for those people who didn't tune in the first time, give us a little bit of a summary about what the National Town Square is about, what makes it unique, and why and how it's a game changer.
Okay, let's start, Steve, with the recognition that for more than 240 years we've had our system of government, which is three branches of government. But one thing that's been missing that entire time, primarily because it hasn't been possible, is a mechanism that provides we the people with a coherent, collective advisory voice to influence our elected representatives. Now, it's never been possible until quite recently, and this really presents us with an historic opportunity. What we're doing now is taking the first steps, building the first steps in a new national infrastructure for civic engagement by creating a new national institution that's non-governmental, non-corporate, and most importantly, nonpartisan, that is issue-driven. This would be a new venue, really a new gathering place for citizens to provide advisory input to our representatives online at a virtual town square. The National Town Square is what we're referring to it as. Keeping in mind that 240 years ago, the town square really was where people assembled, but clearly it's not practical for 200 million people to assemble in any one physical space. So this is where the confluence of mobile devices, of technology, and more importantly, of this historic opportunity converge. I have just had my book published, which sets forth the framework for manifesting the National Town Square as a citizen-led initiative. The book is called Virtual Countries: Strategy for 21st Century Democracy. Over the past several years, we've created the technology and also the intellectual property that will be assigned to the citizen-led steward organization that will be responsible for the operations and, more importantly, for maintaining the integrity of this new voice for we the people. So 240 years ago, it wouldn't have been possible. For the first time in known human history, it is now possible. The voting booth is literally as close as the mobile device in one's phone or one's, or rather the mobile device or phone in one's pocket or purse. We don't really need to wait for an election every 2 years in order to have a say on the important issues that affect us all. You know, that's been the paradigm for the last 240 years. It's all focused on one day every couple of years. But now we really do have the opportunity to show up in one place easily in an unlimited number and cast advisory votes on issues selected by citizens themselves, on those issues that really matter to all of us. And, you know, the other reason this is an historical opportunity is because if we the people don't show up and do this and claim this opportunity, you can be sure that it's going to be co-opted by the same influences, the same corrupting influence of big money and politics that has already laid waste to our existing political system. So this is work that needs to be done. And right now we're working on phase one, which is assembling the individuals who will gather, individuals from different walks of life, not necessarily politicians, but, you know, people who are respected for their integrity, who are known for that, whether it be in government, in education, the arts, music, sports, you name it, people that may have very, very different views on individual issues, but whose very presence in the same place mutually pledged to manifesting this new coherent voice for we the people, that's going to get attention. And at the same time that group is being put together, we're providing a way for citizens everywhere to pre-register for a secure voting account at the National Town Square when it goes live in the coming year. So again, the book is called Virtual Country: Strategy for 21st Century Democracy, and it gives you a good overview. And then the pre-registration takes place at nationaltownsquare.us. All right, that's a bit of a mouthful, but hopefully that provides enough background that people will understand what we're discussing today.
Okay, good. Now, of course, at this recent Unrigged Summit, people from all across the political spectrum, I was very impressed by the variety of progressive, conservative, centrist, far this way, far that way, all coming to the realization that we've been disenfranchised by what two people from Harvard Business School called the political industrial complex that's run seemingly for the benefit of the two political parties and those people who serve those parties as their pollsters, as their publicists, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Want to clear one thing about the National Town Square. It is an advisory an advisory institution. So, in other words, the vote doesn't count like a vote would count. However, as you said earlier, it is completely verifiable, as verifiable as you say as our bank cards are. And so, in certain ironically, I would say. The vote at National Town Square may be more authentic in terms of having a real person rather than a bot than the one that they do in the voting booth. So I think that's one thing. And then the other thing is that this is a truly, I see it. I'm so excited about it. I see it as a truly evolutionary step to bringing we the people out of the being manipulated to pick one side or another and then show up every 2 years to the point where we actually can, at the touch of a finger, express ourselves on a daily basis, if need be, and aggregate in large numbers. So we'll talk a little more about that. I want to introduce our second guest, Reverend Lupton Abshire, who is the Director of Strategic Outreach for National Town Square. He's an Episcopal priest. He's got over 25 years' experience serving faith communities around the country and in East Africa. His academic background includes degrees in organizational behavior, theology, and philosophy. He is originally from the Washington, D.C. area, and he's from a political family. And he currently lives and is a clergyman in the Fort Collins, Colorado area. So welcome, Lupton.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be with you.
Okay, well, let's jump right in. What was it that led you to discover the National Town Square? And then what was it that got you excited about it? So start with the discovery first.
Well, there were two influences on me. I'd say about two and a half years ago. One was a documentary that was produced by the BBC at the turn of the century, this past century, probably about 17 years ago, called The Century of the Self. And it's fascinating. It shows the how citizenship in the United States was co-opted by consumerism. It also shows the influence of Edward Bernays and his uncle, Sigmund Freud, on assumptions about human nature and whether or not people are really capable of being citizens in a democracy. And to make a long story short, the conclusion was that they're not, and it would be better to create infrastructures and cultivate values to make citizens in America into passive consumers. And what really captured my attention is the infrastructures that were created. So starting with, say, department stores in the late 19th century, and then the emergence of advertising in the early 20th century, television, radio, the shopping mall, and then finally Amazon. So as consumers, we're totally empowered. I mean, you know, especially with Amazon, we can go and shop easily, effortlessly. And then the other area that in my sort of studies is the financialization of the economy. So for the vast majority of people, the masses, what's cultivated there and enabled through infrastructures is consumerism, and for the elites, it's infrastructures that enable the financialization of the economy. Now, the other influence on me is a leadership development framework that comes out of the Sloan School at MIT, and this is called Theory U. And this is a book by Otto Scharmer, who's a senior lecturer at MIT, Theory U. The title is Theory U, Leading from the Future as It Emerges, the Social Technology of Presencing. And one of the things that that Theory U brings out is the process of vocational discovery, discovering how you can discover your sort of higher calling in life. And Theory U is written for people in the business world and mainly for entrepreneurs. But this captured my attention because I was feeling called about 2 years ago to do something about what I saw the democracy entering into a crisis stage of development. I'd never been politically active. I voted, you know, for presidential candidates and sometimes for other candidates. But like many Americans, I was on the sidelines. But I felt a sense of calling, but what to do, especially if I had never been involved in politics. Well, I followed a protocol set forth by Theory U. And basically, it says, first, check your sincerity about, you know, or is this something you're really, you know, feeling called to serve, as opposed to having mixed motives, like just wanting to make money. And I did that. And then Otto Scharmer recommends formulating a open-ended research question. And so my question was simply, what are the public conditions and personal capacities necessary for democracy to be viable and ideally to move to its next stage of maturity? The next step is to go out into the world and engage people who are already doing innovative and transformational work in the area that you're sensing that you're being called to. And so I created a interview project called Democracy Calling. And I went out and I knew a few people who were involved in the transpartisan movement. And I had a short 15 to 20 minute interview with just three basic questions. And then I'd ask the interviewee, can you recommend a couple of people who, you know, who I might interview next? And I ended up interviewing 38 people in about 6 months. And let me just quickly tell you the three interview questions. One was, what do you find compelling about the promise of democracy in America? Two, what is your sense of the current status quo politics? And three, what do you think democracy requires of us to realize its potential, first in terms of political infrastructures and second in terms of personal virtues and capacities? For me personally, the key question was about infrastructure. So this is, now I go back to the Century of the Self documentary.
Okay.
I realize we, are we out
we're
of time?
Taking a,
I can continue
yeah,
later.
Well, just for the segment, we'll come right back to this very interesting conversation with Reverend Lupton Abshire and Richard Lang, author of Virtual Country.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Imagine, it is the year 2039. A single corporation controls most of the world through genetic modification, food, and drugs. A senior geneticist's lover dies, launching him on a quest to take down the psychopathic CEO and the handful of elite families that control the corporation. The feature film Corporate Prey, based on the novel of the same name, points us toward a dystopian future where we seem to be headed. Huge corporations do largely control our farms and our pharma. And wealthy elites seem to be operating to the detriment of most humans. Can we reverse course? Can prophecy lead to prevention? Can a movie awaken enough of us in time? To find out more and how you can help bring this enlightening film to light, go to CorporatePrey.com. Corporate Prey. That's P-R-E-Y.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket. A tent, a sandbag, a doctor, Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Steve Behrman here. We're back with Reverend Lupton Apshire and Richard Lang, author of Virtual Country. They're talking about the National Town Square. And incidentally, if you want to join the conversation, you can call in at 202-570-7057. At the half-hour mark, we'll begin to take calls. So, Lupton, you were talking about the criteria, the questions that you set before yourself in doing democracy calling. Why don't you review those and take it from there?
Right. So the final question was to ask interviewees, what do you think democracy requires of us to realize its potential, first in terms of political infrastructures and second in terms of personal virtues or capacities? For me personally, the question I was really interested in had to do with infrastructures, because going back to that documentary, The Century of the South, what I realized is for the past 100 years, we've put loads of energy into creating infrastructures to enable Americans to be consumers. But meanwhile, our infrastructures for enabling and cultivating citizenship are paltry. And if someone came from, say, another planet, they go, this is a joke. You clearly do not take democracy seriously. What you do take, you know, is your consumeristic economy seriously, because that's, you know, that's where you've put the effort in for creating these infrastructures. So anyway, just finishing. So Theory U says you go out into the world and you engage people who are already doing creative work in the area you feel called to. And then, and this is sort of an interesting twist, you'll meet the people, the person or the people you're called to cooperate with. So I have friends that would ask me, so what data are you gathering with your interview? And I would say, well, it's not really about that. I mean, you know, I learned some interesting things in talking to people. But really it was kind of who is it who I'm called to work with? Well, interview number 24 was a man named Richard Lang from the California Bay Area. Richard and I hit it off, and he answered my question. He described his proposal for a national town square, and, you know, I had a lot of questions. I said, wow, that sounds like a great idea, but what about this and what about that? And he said, well, read the book. It's not published yet, but I'll send you a pre-published draft, but please read the whole book because it answers all the questions. So I got it. I printed it out, and I sat down and read it carefully, and I realized that's it. That's just what the doctor has ordered for what troubles our democracy, and it's what's missing. And I got back in touch with Richard a couple of months later, and I said, count me in. How can I help? And he invited me into his core leadership team, and so this has become my work in addition to my church work for the past, I don't know, about, 6 months or so.
Wow. That's very good. So as director of director of strategic outreach, how do you see your role in this and in helping unfold and turn this into a reality?
Well, I'm from the Washington area, and although I've not had experience in politics or government or anything like that, and quite honestly haven't been particularly interested in that area, my father's career was very much in institution building in Washington, not so much with politics, but policy. And my father was David Abshire, and he was the co-founder of one of the leading think tanks, the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And this was his calling. Throughout his life, he worked all the way until he died 3 years ago. And it was obvious to me, even as a child, that he had a true sense of calling to this work. And what the center really was about is bringing people, as they say, you know, to meet, bringing them across the aisle so they could come together, you know, to work together and try to transcend the things that divided them. And that was his life's work. And so it's interesting that after his death, you know, I kind of realized a similar calling. And so through my father's legacy and all the people he knew, and then I served a church for about almost 10 years in Washington in the 90s, and a lot of the parishioners were pretty influential people. So when I met Richard, I said, I think one thing I might be able to contribute is reaching out to people who I have what I call dotted line connections, influential people primarily in Washington, who might become supportive of this initiative. And ideally, what we're looking for is coalescing leadership around this for people who discover a calling to this, like Richard and I have, because we really feel that we're in service to a higher idea, which is the realization of democracy in America. And I'll just say one other thing real quick. My big picture, my sort of meta view of this, is that although historically most people have come to America for economic reasons, slaves from Africa were victims of economic reasons for people coming here, our real reason for being in the United States, I believe, is that we're called to enact democracy for the rest of the world. That is our calling. And if there's anything exceptional about America, it's realizing that calling. If we don't do that, then God help us.
And hopefully God will. Having said that, I want to call Richard back into the conversation, because I think you bring out this this higher and deeper mission that perhaps the founders of this country, you know, with all their flaws, were tremendous visionaries. And the motto and slogan that emerges is E Pluribus Unum, out of many one. So Richard, how do you see this E Pluribus Unum being amplified and expressed by the National Town Square?
Well, it's interesting. Just recently, I looked up the dictionary definition of coherence. And the reason I did that is because, you know, in many conversations we've talked about the need for our citizenry to have a coherent voice, a coherent collective voice in the affairs of our country. And so that dictionary definition is the quality of forming a unified whole. Okay, I'll say it again, the quality of forming a unified whole. Now, it just so happens that E Pluribus Unum means out of many, one. So, you know, the beautiful thing that pointed out to me is that the literal meaning of E Pluribus Unum in today's terms is coherence. The idea that all of us as citizens can speak with one voice. And you see, that was an ideal that existed in 1776, but in terms of manifesting it, the technology just wasn't there. I mean, you know, the idea of representative government, of the republic that we are, it in part was the only option available. And so we have the three branches of government. So, you know, who knows if there had been technology at the level we have today, you know, back in 1776, whether or not we would have had a fourth branch of government to give citizens advisory input. It's fun to think about. But the reality is, just very recently, I mean, in the last 10, 12 years, that capability has finally emerged. So, you know, the idea that we have to wait 2 years to have some input in terms of civic engagement, that's an antiquated idea. And the idea of having coherence, I'll just go one other point on that. The importance of it is something like this. Imagine a choir where you have 100 people that are singing. right? In order to have coherence, something has to actually be happening. There has to be an action taking, this quality of unifying into a whole. In a choir, you have a whole bunch of people that are singing presumably the same song and doing so in the same key, and that's why it's so powerful. You can feel it in your body. There's a resonance to that. If that same choir was either different people were singing different songs, or even if they were singing the same song, it's called the Song of Democracy, but were singing in different keys, what you would have is disjointed incoherence, and that doesn't carry a lot of power with it. It doesn't resonate clearly, but when everyone is assembled singing the same song in the same key, that's real power. Now, where that segues, I think, nicely to where we're at now is the idea of influencing our elected officials. We know that they are influenced by big money. That's what they need to get reelected. And we know that they are influenced by a number of other things once they're in office. But the citizens have very, very little influence. You know, petitions almost never accomplish anything. We have polls that sometimes people point to and say, oh, look, this is what people believe. But, you got to remember that we're talking about 1,000 people that were polled, not the citizenry itself. So, the idea that we can have very large numbers would have been very far-fetched even 15 years ago. But think about it for a second. Everyone pretty much has a mobile device, typically a phone, in their pocket or their purse. And to the degree that a citizen can have an authenticated, secure voting account where something comes up, and it matters to citizens, they could literally, very rapidly log into that voting account and show up, perhaps, over the course of a week or a couple of weeks, depending upon the urgency involved. And suddenly you really could have, we will have 100 million plus, 150 million plus citizens showing up. And it's those kinds of numbers that are more influential than the big money in politics. Those are the kind of numbers, far less than that. I mean, think back about the do not call list. 75 million people showed up to sign their names, essentially voting, I want legislation that keeps solicitors from calling me. And 75 million people resulted in bipartisan legislation signed into law in literally record time. Politicians pay attention to numbers, and so this is our way. This is the new paradigm, the new opportunity we have is to show up in huge numbers. And again, as you pointed out, Steve, this is not really direct democracy in the sense that the word is typically used, which implies that people are voting on bills and whatnot. This is just a coherent, collective advisory voice, but that voice can be super loud and super coherent.
Interesting questions is that when people sign up for the National Town Square, what's their commitment? Do they have to state a party preference or anything like that? What kind of information does National Town Square collect about people?
Well, both now and eventually when the real site goes live. Right now, the nationaltownsquare.us is simply a place for citizens to pre-register for an authenticated voting account. But one thing that's true now, and it'll still be true, and it's a core principle, is that the National Town Square will never, ever collect information on a person's political party affiliation. For that matter, the only thing that would be collected is information such as a person's name. We want to verify that they're a real citizen and their zip code, but never anything else, and no data would ever be sold. That's sort of the risk if something like this were to be presented by some big tech company or, someone else who sees the opportunity, you can bet that the motivation would be to collect data and then sell it to politicians to give them advantage in the election, which would, destroy the whole thing. So, not knowing what party you are is important, because then focus can be just on this one issue at a time. Okay, you know, forget the other issues that might divide us. You know, where are the issues one at a time? You know, how do we feel about that? And it gives us an out from the hyper partisanship that we've been like corralled by.
Yes, exactly. Lupton, I wanted to ask you something. We've got a couple of minutes left before we take a break. What is it about the National Town Square that is most exciting and encouraging to you moving forward?
Well, there are five things, but I'll just pick one since we only have another minute. And that is, Richard emphasizes that there's a historic opportunity before us with the National Town Square as described in his book, Virtual Country. And one of the things that really captured my attention is the National Town Square would allow, for the first time in the history of this country, true political equality. Because if you become an advisory voter on the National Town Square, you have the same vote, you have the same status as the billionaire or the pauper. I mean, it really is in the political sphere, as a citizen, that political equality can be found. Right now, and from the beginning, it hasn't, because of economic reasons and other reasons like classism and racism and that kind of thing. But within the National Town Square, which Richard describes as a walled garden for integrity, within the National Town Square, we have the opportunity for the first time to all be equal as citizens and just as citizens. So you might call it Citizens Anonymous, because you enter and you're not a Republican, Democrat, you're not white, black, Hispanic. We are all citizens together, taking responsibility to identify and prioritize issues that are of a collective concern. There are many issues that really only concern, you know, some of us, but there are issues now with, you know, the global economy that affect all of us. And so that's one of the most compelling things. And I see that moving our democracy from what I call a late adolescent stage of development into early adulthood.
Very well said. Very well said. And I think that you're suggesting that this new institution will take a disheartened population and inspire them to maturity. We'll be back with Reverend Lupton Abshire and Richard Lang, and maybe you after this break.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network, presenting transformative programs and events to help you waken to your full potential, so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
I rescued Toast from a shelter in 2011. I love Toast because she's a lazy diva. Toast does whatever she wants, obviously. She's sleeping right now. She's so loving. She's so comforting. When I walked into the shelter, I knew right then that she was special.
Toast, Instagram star, and shelter pet. Amazing adoption stories start in shelters. Start yours today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back with Reverend Lupton Epshire and Richard Lang talking about the National Town Square. Chris, our producer, anybody on the line? Okay, good. Well, we'll continue. I have a question, Richard. I want to back up and create some background. Richard and Lupton and I all attended this conference, the UNRIG conference, UNRIG the System. 1,500 people, many of them young people, who are there because they really want to unrig the system. They want a system that's fair. They want a system that's representative. And there was so many worthy projects there. You know, there were a lot of different ideas and so on. And I came to see the National Town Square as a meta strategy. We've talked about this before, meta strategy. So what do you mean, Richard, by meta strategy?
Well, what I mean by that term is that there are many, many organizations, companies, nonprofits, et cetera, who are doing good and important work. And it's yet, I mean, there are so many for that matter. When I wrote my book, I lost count at over 950 or civic engagement related organizations. And, it became obvious to me at that time that, there's no way that any individual citizen is going to be able to evaluate, which of these is the best one to get involved with. Many of them sound similar. And, and yet, they're all well motivated, all doing different work that's related. But I would consider those more in the realm of tactical strategies. And I mean that in a supportive way. But by meta strategy, what I mean is that it is possible to have something that we all do, including all of those organizations, that those organizations can, in addition to what they're already doing, can be also reminding citizens of the opportunity to open a voting account at the National Town Square, and in so doing, add to the numbers of citizens whose vote is added and their voice is added to the collective. In return for that, the National Town Square, as a secondary benefit, serves as a funnel and a portal. So, so what that means is as citizens gather there for the core purpose of weighing in, becoming educated about issues, which is another benefit we haven't talked about. But, once they've weighed in, there would also be the opportunity to go further. Say you come in and voted on an issue, say having to do with, let's just say climate change in some fashion, it's general. But, at that point, you'd have the opportunity to say, okay, I want to take a further step. I want to either volunteer or I want to, provide marketing work or support or who knows what. Then citizens would be able to connect to these other organizations, these 950. I'm sure it's, thousands if you really get granular about it. But it's a way of unifying. It's a symbiotic relationship, a synergistic one where, the meta strategy serves all of the tactical strategies, and all of the tactical strategies serve to focus citizens on the central venue, the central gathering place where we can have our numbers counted. That makes sense?
Yeah. And yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, that's it. That's what I mean by it.
I think that what you're talking about in this gathering place, this is, we are guaranteed in the Constitution freedom of assembly. And yet, back in the George Bush era, I remember that people who were protesting the Iraq War were put into what was the Orwellian term was free speech zones. And in these free speech zones, they were free to speak as long as there was nobody there to hear them. So all of a sudden, there is an independent gathering place that I hear you describe it in a way as a hub that – It's a central location where citizens can gather independently of mainstream media, of government, corporate interest, and so on, and begin to engage in a way that where all of this entire web of citizen connection is being woven together. Now, I want to set out what I would call a television, okay? And you guys can both respond to this. Imagine what would happen if 100 or 150 million people showed up on an issue. Let's take an issue like, for example, legalization of cannabis as an example of an issue where or even campaign financing, which are the kinds of issues where the people are way, way, way ahead of the of the legislators in the case, in probably both of these cases, because the legislators are more beholden to the moneyed interests. What do you imagine would happen if at the National Town Square there were 150 million people or so gathered to voice their vote for something that the legislators were not otherwise disposed to enact? What might happen?
Well, let me go first, if I may. Okay, I think it's really almost a no-brainer, right? I mean, what would happen is that you would have suddenly have the attention, and let's take a real issue, right? Like overturning Citizens United. Mm-hmm. Which is one that, you know, polls tell us that, you know, 90% of citizens want Citizens United overturned or reversed. But the polls don't matter because they aren't real numbers. So to use your example, if 150 million people showed up and, you know, 90% of those said we want it overturned, the writing would be on the wall for the next election. The politicians would say, holy mackerel, I'm looking at, you know, where those zip codes are and 150 million people. I'm out if I vote against this next time around. I have no way to justify it. So that's where the influence comes back in my view.
And well, you know, there is a precedent for that. You mentioned the do not call list, but there was something that happened. I might have mentioned it the last time you were on. And that is something that happened about 12 years ago where two organizations, Christian Coalition and MoveOn.org, combined forces. They put a full-page ad in the New York Times to protect net neutrality. And what happened was in that several days, the switchboards of Congress were basically shut down. They were overwhelmed because so many people from left and right, from both of these organizations, voiced their choice. And that preserved net neutrality for another 11 years. So the power of the coherence that you were talking about earlier, the coherence of the citizen speaking in one loud and overwhelming voice, rather than being balkanized into, you know, two bulky sides fighting one another. So Lupton, do you have anything to add on that?
Well, this strategy would also liberate politicians. I've listened to a lot of interviews with politicians, and you do hear, despite moneyed special interests, politicians, representatives lamenting, saying we really do want to work together across the aisle on practical problems that need to be solved. But the problem is that the current structure disallows that because of the special interest influence combined with moneyed influence. So if you had a National Town Square and you had, say, 100 million or 150 million people, net neutrality is a good example, who weighed in. Now, these are advisory votes. They're not binding. But now you have very important information that you have a constituency of 100 million, 150 million people who want net neutrality. Politicians who are serious about being public servants, who are serious about serving the people rather than just cashing in, would be liberated because they'd go, now I have 150 million people behind me. So it's a balance of power. that now has been established. So it would liberate people. And another thing is it would encourage more people, and especially young people, to get involved in politics, because now there's an opportunity to come together to address, again, issues as serious problems to be solved, as opposed to partisan positions to be maintained for just the benefit of, you know, special interests. So this National Town Square, it's like populism comes of age, but we seem to pit populism against, you know, representative government. But this would liberate our political leaders, our representatives, too.
You know, there was something that was suggested. It wasn't exactly said, but I want to kind of pick up on that. You talked about this, Lupton, and you can jump in as well, Richard. And that has to do with cultivating a more mature body politic. You know, in a certain regard, we learn, probably by default, we learn that really what we have to do is guard our own personal self-interest. And yet there's something about making a decision and being part of this National Town Square that brings out the more of a vision in citizens, saying, you know, I want to do what's good for not just me, but everybody. I am part of everybody, so that makes sense. But do you see that? Do you see this, Lupton, the National Town Square calling forth that kind of that level of maturity?
Yes, I do. we do have a society that is structured and cultivates self-interest, but I think that's part of the adolescent stage, I think, of our society. But it is invigorating and empowering, and anyone who kind of remembers their transition from teenagehood to young adulthood, there is something really empowering about at long last starting to take responsibility, first off. And the other thing that I find very energizing is collaborating with others. And we see this when you have, a catastrophe, a natural disaster, like the floods, you know, in Houston. For a lot of people, or we have big floods here a few years ago in northern Colorado, and people came out and got to know their neighbors and worked together, and there was a period of several weeks where people, you know, rediscovered neighborly cooperation. So likewise, I think this would give us the opportunity, and this is just a first step. I think that should be emphasized, and Richard makes this clear in the book. This is not the solution that solves everything. Really, this is just beginning. It gives us an opportunity to re-engage with citizenship. It's exciting, you know, to imagine the possibilities of creating a political sphere for everyone to take responsibility, you know, as citizens. Again, we have a representative government. For most of us, you know, we don't have time to delve into issues. That's why we elect people to devote all their time to it. But I think that there's a kind of a fellowship, you know, that could really emerge that would move the United States to a new level and also be an example for the rest of the world. I can imagine people around the world going, oh, my goodness, I'll have what they're having. We want a national town square in Poland or Japan or China. I mean, it's and Richard, maybe I'll toss the ball to you, but this, and Steve, you brought this out in your description, the difference between a revolution and an evolution, because historically, radical change has always involved violence. And this is a nonviolent opportunity because it's evolutionary rather than revolutionary, revolution in you know, the terms of political history. And Steve, I think I'll hand it over to you on the note.
Yeah.
Or Steve good. Or Richard.
I
was just going to pick up and say that it's really the evolution of revolution, right? I mean, you know, it's a new way to have a political revolution that does not involve bloodshed, that does not involve, you know, anything other than showing up and showing up in a place where it's safe, where it's secure, where it's clear, where it's authenticated, where there's trust, you know, where we're not arguing over what a fact is. It's a place where that's a given because the citizens who are pledged to maintaining the integrity of this really sacred space for citizenship, that takes precedent over the position on any individual issue. So, you know, that's why it's an evolution of revolution.
Yeah, I really like that term. And there's another term that you use, Richard, and we're getting close to time. Just very briefly, that distinction between proactive and reactive, proactivism, getting off the battlefield of these two sides butting heads and creating a space for cooperation. Can you say something about that proactivism idea?
Well, it's really the alternative to resistance, right? To be proactive. Like, it's good to resist. I mean, there are things that must be resisted, but that can't be the only strategy. So what this introduces is the idea, okay, while we're resisting where we need to, let's be proactive. Let's be proactivists. And the way we can do that is to reengage and to show up. And the only thing we need is a place to do that. And that's what the National Town Square represents.
Well,
so I urge people, if you go to virtualcountry.us, you'll see it laid out, and you know, hopefully you'll be as inspired as all of us are at this point.
Thank you so much, Reverend Lupton Epshire and Richard Lang,
nationaltownsquare.us
and virtualcountry.us. We'll be back next week, Wiki Politiki, and this is Steve Behrman.